We will call this meeting to order. This is the World Trade and also the Senate Resources Committee meeting together jointly. Thank you for all being here. Let the record reflect that it is 3:32 p.m. on Wednesday, April 21st, 2021. Now, present today are Senator Begich was here. He should be back shortly. Senator Hoffman is here. Senator Hughes, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, Senator Machicki, Senator Rivak, and myself, Chairman Stevens. Again, thank you for being here. Staffing committee today is the invaluable Betty Tangeman. Thank you, Betty, for setting this up. Moderator Nate Williams and Christopher Dickrell in the room for records. Particularly want to thank Chairman Rivak for sharing your time slot with us and having this meeting together. I think it's particularly important. Everyone, please remember to turn off your cell phones if you have them with you. Today's agenda includes a presentation and a discussion about the Alaska seafood and U.S. trade policy by the At-Sea Processors Association. Joining us today via Teams is Stephanie Madsen and Matt Tining. Stephanie has lived in the fishing dependent coastal communities of Cordova, Kodiak, and then 19 years in Unalaska Dutch Harbor, number one port for landings in the U.S. She served on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council for 6 years, had the pleasure to serve that as chair for 4 years. The airport there in Unalaska Dutch Harbor is named after her late husband, Tom Madsen, and known to many as the Aleutian Aviator. Full disclosure, my wife Rita is the first cousin to Tommy Madsen, and knew him and greatly respected him and missed his presence in Alaska. Stephanie has lived in Juneau since 1999 and is currently the executive director of the At-Sea Processors Association. The co-presenter will be Matt Tining. He serves as director of sustainability and public affairs at the At-Sea Processors Association. In this capacity, he leads APA's engagement on national policy and its work in the international arena relating to sustainability and corporate social responsibility. Prior to joining APA, Matt had a variety of leadership roles as environmental at environmental nonprofit organizations. Most recently, he led Environmental Defense Fund's U.S. Oceans Program, overseeing teams in New England, the Gulf of Mexico, the Pacific, and Washington, D.C., promoting best practices in fisheries policy and management. Earlier in his career, Matt worked for the Australian Embassy in Washington, D.C., and in the United States Senate. He holds an arts and law degree from Australian National University. So a pleasure to have these two people with us, and I'm pleased to have so many people from both committees here today. Now please, Stephanie Madsen, if you'd place yourself on the record, please, and begin.
Good afternoon, Chairman Stevens and members of the committees. I sure do miss seeing you face-to-face, person-to-person. It's been tough. Really do miss you at the receptions, let alone visiting you in the Capitol building. We are so pleased today, committee members, to join you today to discuss seafood trade challenges facing our industry. We would like to kick things off with some introductions to let you know a bit of background about myself and my colleague, Matt Tining. We'd then like to provide a bit of an overview of our fishery. This will be familiar to many of you, but we're extremely proud of how the Bering Sea Alaska pollock fishery has evolved to become a world-leading seafood fishery, and we'd like to spend a few minutes reviewing how we operate. Third, we'll discuss markets for Alaska seafood. As you all know, Alaska seafood producers proudly serve American consumers, delivering the best seafood in the world to people in every corner of our country. But we produce so much seafood and such a variety of products that are not generally favored by U.S. consumers that fair access to international markets is absolutely critical. Fourth, we'll talk about the serious market access challenges we face in key geographies. The truth is that in every key export market for Alaska seafood, Europe, Japan, China, the United Kingdom, and Russia, we face unfair barriers to entry that hurt our businesses and serve to hold back the Alaska seafood economy. We'll review the state of play in each. Finally, we'll look at U.S. trade policy under Presidents Trump and Biden, what we see as long-term shortcomings in the way that seafood is treated by federal trade policymakers and negotiations. I hope we can spend some time together today really focusing in on this and perhaps getting your ideas and support for new and different approaches to trade policy at the federal level. So, Mr. Chairman, if that general approach to today's hearing meets your approval, we'll go ahead and dive in. Mr. Chairman, as you and other members of the committees know, Betty, I guess I need to let you go to the next slide, please. Sorry about that. There it is. As you know, this is a walleye pollock, or wild Alaska pollock, as U.S. caught pollock is universally known. This is the fish that Pat and I wake up every morning thinking about. My career started in Alaska almost 50 years ago. It's a great Alaska story. I came up after high school to visit my aunt and uncle and work in their air taxi in Cordova, Alaska. I learned about the Copper River Kings, Flame Sound gillnet fisheries, Valdez before there was a pipeline. I met my late husband, who was a pilot there, who, as Senator Stevens mentioned, was born and raised boy from Kodiak. So it's not surprising, after our stint in Cordova, we moved to Kodiak, where I taught school, and Tom was a fish spotter for herring. After a few years there, an opportunity came up in Unalaska Dutch Harbor to fly Grumman gooses. So being married to a pilot, we headed out there. 19 years we spent out there in Senator Huffman's district, number one port, as I mentioned. Out in Unalaska Dutch Harbor, we learned about the king crab. Given that we were out there for so long, starting in 1980, we watched the foreign fleets, the switch to joint venture, and a fully domesticated federal fishery develop all the while we were out there. Now, that's a federal fishery. And, of course, you all know Magnuson-Stevens Act that enables us to manage from 3 to 200 miles. So I think most of you know my history, but there's a little bit of an overview. And now I'll turn over to Matt to let him talk about his history.
Thanks, Daphne. And it's a real privilege to be testifying with you today. As Chairman Stephen said, I wasn't born into the Alaska seafood industry. I'm originally from Australia, but I worked out pretty quickly that there was nothing in the world quite like Alaska seafood. And for the last 2 years, I've been absolutely privileged to work with this industry and really see my job as to work at the federal level and globally to try and make sure that Alaska's global leadership on sustainable seafood is recognized and rewarded. Back to you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Matt. And Betty, if we could go to slide three. Well, every Alaska fishery is unique, but for Matt and me, nothing beats the Bering Sea Alaska pollock fishery. And I'm pleased to be able to share this exclusive footage of Senator Stevens showing his affection for wild Alaska pollock as well. For us, it all comes down to the three S's. Next slide, Betty.
The first one is soft. Stephanie, I don't know where you found that picture, but just to make it clear, I'm the second from the right, not the second from the left. So.
And the beautiful lady with the beautiful hair is, of course, Rita. So, size, that's the first S. It can be difficult to wrap your head around just how vast the Bering Sea Alaska pollock fishery really is. One way to think about it is in the context of the overall U.S. federal landings. On this chart, you can see Alaska pollock landings, well, it says red in my notes, but I think it's white, and all other combined federal fisheries landings in green. Fully one-third of fish landed in federal waters stretching from Hawaii to Pacific to New England to the Caribbean come from this single fishery. Indeed, at 1.3 million metric tons, the Bering Sea Alaska pollock fishery is the biggest seafood fishery in the world. Only the Peruvian anchoviet fishery, which is primarily a reduction fishery, is bigger. It is this scale that makes Alaska a true international White House powerhouse, with this single fishery accounting for almost 20% of global wild-caught whitefish production. The second S, Betty, next slide, sustainability. All of you know well the fact that the North Pacific Fishery Management is the envy of the world. And we are just so proud of the Bering Sea Pollock Fisheries decades-long sustainability story. I won't go into a lot of detail on this now, but features of the management system include precautionary science-based catch limits set by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, 2 independent observers on every vessel in our fleet monitoring our operations and recording everything that is caught, including we have scales and many, many cameras. One of the lowest bycatch rates in any large-scale fishery in the world. More than 98% of what comes up in our nets is pollock. One of the lowest carbon footprints of any protein. We have an independent life cycle analysis coming soon that will show eating pollock is less carbon intensive than going vegan. 100% utilization of the fish. Most all of our vessels produce fish meal and fish oil with the parts of the fish not used for core products. Nothing goes to waste. There's far more to the story for any of you who are interested. But for now, I'll just say that I would proudly put our sustainability record up against any other fishery in the world. And that record has been recognized consistently by independent certifiers, including the Marine Stewardship Council and the Responsible Fishing Management Team. Next slide, Betty. The third S, scrumptious. Now, admittedly, this is a bit subjective.
Excuse me, Stephanie, I have a question from the table here. If you'd hold on just 1 minute. Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie, for being online today. It was from the previous slide dealing with the Marine Stewardship Council certified sustainability. Is that only for the one species dealing with pollock?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kawasaki, no. There are a lot of Alaska seafood that hold both of these certifications. I don't know if I'm going to have an exhaustive list, but I know that crab, cod, halibut, sablefish, there's quite a few of our Alaska seafood that are sustainably managed and are certified by both of these bodies.
Yes, please, Senator, go ahead.
And then just to follow up, is that specifically in the Bering Sea in the same regions as the trawler fleet?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kawasaki, no. This at least for the pollock fishery, it includes the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska, as does many of the other fisheries that are certified.
So just one more follow-up, and I'll probably ask more questions about bycatch later on. But you mentioned the bycatch issue, or the bycatch at 2%. There's an article just from last year dealing with the bycatch of sablefish, black cod, in the region. And this when this article was written in 2020, it said that this was the second year in a row the Bering Sea trawl fishery caught more sablefish as bycatch than their allocation allowed, 484% in that year. The previous year, it was 356% overage. So year to year, that's 11 million pounds over 2 years. Can you speak to that issue? And I guess how there might be some mitigation efforts to prevent that bycatch.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kawasaki, that's a complex answer, but let me try to break it down for you. First, our fleet hasn't encountered the sablefish like some of the smaller inshore catcher vessels have. That's not to say that we won't someday. With climate changing in the Bering Sea, We have definitely seen a change in the distribution of species across the shelf and in the deep. So I think you're going to see distribution changes, which will change encounter rates. There is an allowance for the trawl fleet to have a sable fish. The sable fish fishery is expanding. The stock is very healthy in the Bering Sea. There are a lot of small sable fish. In fact, the council right now is working on trying to figure out ways to release small sable fish in some of the fisheries. I think the North Pacific Council has a discussion paper coming out about the overages. But I really do think we need to look at the complete picture in the sense that it's an increasing biomass and the distributional shifts. So I think that we'll look forward to that discussion paper.
And just one brief question.
Yes, please, Senator Kawasaki.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. And just one brief question. In the Bering Sea, salmon that are headed, Chinook specifically, headed in Chum, headed up the Yukon in Kuskokwim, there's a program that allows that bycatch to, rather than being tossed, to be used to feed, I think in time, I can't remember what, emergency times. Does the sable fish fishery have the same thing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kawasaki, no. The only two species that are permitted are salmon, as you mentioned, and halibut. Now, the rules are different for different fleets. Our fleet participates in the food bank program for the incidental catch of Chinook and Chum that we encounter. We are not allowed to participate in the halibut program, and there is no sable fish program because it's sable fish is not what they call, Senator Kawasaki, a prohibited species catch. It does go on discard if you exceed too much, but we do have some species that are particularly specified as prohibited catch, like salmon, herring, halibut, and in some cases crab. And those, like I mentioned, salmon and halibut are the only two prohibited species that are eligible for the food bank program that you mentioned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. While we are stopped here, Stephanie, could you talk about the mitigation efforts, what has been done, what can be done in the future? 2% is a pretty small percentage, but I know it's still a concern for many people. What can be done to decrease that over time?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Stevens. A good question. The Bering Sea pollock fishery is in what they call a rationalized fishery, thanks to Senator Stevens when he was back in D.C. and the American Fisheries Act. So we're able to form a cooperative, and that enables us to manage our fleet a little bit better than if you were in a race for fish. So we do have incidental catch of Chinook salmon and Chum salmon. We have caps for Chinook salmon that if we exceed, we get shut down. But in order to incentivize us, we have what we call a performance standard level, which is greatly below the hard cap level. We have to provide a program that has to be approved by NIMS. We have what we call a rolling hotspot closure. So we have some real-time data that indicates where our vessels might be encountering. And depending on what the encounter rate is, those vessels would likely have to move out of that area. That is not a good thing for catcher processors who need to stay on fish, and losing access to fish areas is a real incentive. And in fact, our incentive program, our IPA, incentive program account, is we just did our presentations to the North Pacific, and I can certainly share those with you that talk about the program, rolling hotspot closure. All our vessels have to carry salmon excluders. If we have an outlier, excuse me, over three seasons, they have further restrictions. And then the other one that you might have read about last year was herring. We encountered the herring biomass is increased in the Bering Sea. And in that case, when we exceed a certain threshold, there are areas that are shut down to us. for us, the CP fleet, we lost an area the size of Maryland up north in below. It's in the Northern Bering Sea, but it's not in what we kind of talk about as the Northern Bering Sea. But that was closed off to us. So those are some of the types of mitigation measures that are in place for some of the incidental catch. Senator Stevens, does that answer your question? I would be happy to provide anyone any more information or meet one-on-one if people would like more detailed information.
Thank you, Stephanie. It certainly does answer my question. I know this is close to your heart as a former chairperson of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council for 4 years. I know you were on that council for 6 years. So I know it's an issue that you've been very involved in. So thank you so much. And with no further questions, would you continue on then?
Okay, so we're back to the scrumptious slide. It's almost dinner time for some of you, and maybe you could run out to McDonald's tonight and have a wild Alaska pollock sandwich. As I said, this one is a bit subjective, but we're very proud of the versatility of wild Alaska pollock. You can enjoy it in almost any sandwich from American's quick service restaurants, but also in perhaps less familiar forms, such as surimi seafood, or otherwise known crab with a K. Next slide, please, Betty. A focus for the industry at the moment is expanding the range of our consumer products that incorporates wild Alaska pollock. And our sister organization, GAP, Genuine Alaska Pollock Producers, has developed partnerships with consumer-facing brands to build markets for products as diverse as pollock noodles, pollock wild wings, pollock jerky, and snackable pollock surimi. In my unbiased opinion, all of them are as scrumptious and good for you, and I encourage you to try every single one of them. Next slide, please, Betty. But of course, Alaska pollock is just one of the incredible array of Alaska and North Pacific fisheries that feed seafood lovers both in the United States and around the world. The United States is the largest market for Alaska seafood. Approximately 25% of our seafood goes to domestic consumers. And specifically in the case of Alaska pollock, we're proud to be the fifth most consumed seafood in the United States. But even with Americans enjoying all of that Alaska seafood, the substantial majority of our catch is destined for international markets. Based on data compiled by our friends at ASME, approximately 75% of Alaska seafood production is exported annually to 100 countries. In the case of wild Alaska pollock, more than 80% of our catch goes to export markets. We strongly support efforts to encourage Americans to eat more seafood, and ASME is doing a fantastic job of building the brand for Alaska seafood in U.S. markets. The truth, however, is that any potential upside from those market efforts pales in comparison with the importance of access to export markets. With 75% of Alaska seafood not consumed in the United States, our industry lives and dies based on whether we can export our catch to consumers outside the United States. And despite our best efforts to secure good outcomes from federal trade policy and negotiations, the current state of affairs remains extremely challenging. Matt's going to take it from here.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we have a question, Senator Begich.
Stephanie, if you could guide me to what the colors mean. I don't know what the blue or the gold or orange stand for.
Okay, Stephanie, the question is on the color on the slides, what's the difference between the gold of South Korea and the blue of Europe, China?
I'm gathering it's all seafood from Alaska, but I don't know what the difference between the two colors is.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Senator Stevens, Senator Begich. Honestly, we took this slide from ASME. I think the size of the circles certainly represent the amount I'm sorry that I can't answer the colors, though, Center Baggage. Maybe I can find out, people that are watching might be able to text me and I can answer that question. I apologize.
Okay, thank you so much. Please go on. Matt, I guess, is presenting the next slide.
Yes, thanks so much. Next slide, please, Batty. So as Stephanie said, this really is a crisis for our industry. When I arrived at ATSI Process Association in 2018, it was made very clear that Alaska Seafood just wasn't getting into the international markets and needed to with the ease that we needed it to. And this wasn't just a pollock issue. This was the issue for a lot.
Oh, Matt, we've lost you. You've frozen up. Can you, let's wait just a minute and see what happens. Stephanie, are you still with us?
Senator, I'm still here. Unfortunately, this was Matt, so sections. Oh, there we go. There he is.
I think we're back. Yeah, sorry, Matt. We lost you for a minute there. Please go ahead.
I'm so sorry for that, Mr. Chairman. As I was saying, despite having plugged away at this for years, under two administrations, we're still pretty much in the same place. And when we talk about, fair access for Alaska seafood, this is not something that we're looking to in terms of special treatment. Alaska seafood is the best in the world. We can compete with anyone in the world. All we need is a level playing field. But we are we are a long way from that. And perhaps, the most acute examples we have at the moment, the areas where the crisis is most extreme, are in the countries of China and Russia. So I'll kick off with China. And when I arrived at ATSI Processors Association, this was still a new crisis, which had kicked off really in earnest in July of 2018, you will all recall the escalation in trade tensions between the Trump administration and China. And after the Trump administration imposed a series of tariffs on Chinese imports to the United States, China retaliated on July 6, 2018 with 25% tariffs on a range of US goods, including all US seafood products. Straight away, our product went from being on a level playing field with Russian pollock and other Alaska seafood, with other seafood going into China from other countries, to being on a acutely unlevel playing field, going to competing at 32% against Russian pollock at 7%. Now, China is the largest and fastest growing seafood market in the world. All of the industry's growth, export growth trajectory and kind of models and plans had been built around a massive influx, a massive increase in sales into China. And pretty much overnight, when those 25% tariffs went into effect, that all came screeching to a halt. Those tariffs increased to 35% a few months later. And then after the phase one deal that was concluded in January 2020, they settled at 30%. And that is exactly where they are today. So today, Alaska pollock's going into China at 37%, while Russian pollock is going into China at 7%. Betty, can you move to the next slide? This graph here shows what the results of that situation have been. So the blue line at the top shows the trajectory of exports, seafood exports into China from every country in the world. So that first dot is the 2017 baseline, and then it climbs up very rapidly. By 2019, it is 89% above the 2017 baseline. So imports of seafood into China almost doubled in 2 years. It came off that high in 2020, in no small part because of COVID. But even with the trade limitations related to COVID, in 2020, we were still well over 30% above the 2017 baseline. So that is a massive boost for seafood producers all around the world. But look at what's happening on those other two lines. That red line is US seafood going into China, And even while China just consumed way more global seafood over these 3 years, its consumption of U.S. seafood went rapidly down. So by 2020, we were over 40% below the 2017 baseline, even while global exports were more than 30% above. That final line at the bottom is Alaska pollock. We have been hit even harder than U.S. seafood writ large. We are 55% down from the 2017 baseline. So the situation is dire. Next slide, Betty.
Just a minute, Matt, if we have a question from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt, the lead-in talked about the retaliatory tariffs, yet we've been declining through that entire time frame from 17, and the tariffs began in 18 or 19. Is that correct? Who is supplying that market? So if we just went 17 to 18, that increased 41% for them while we declined 16%. I think it's a 16. Who is supplying the remainder of the market that is was increasing that quickly?
Yeah. So, Senator, on your first point, I apologize if the data is not clear here. This next slide might be more helpful, but the short answer is that the decline only started in July 2018 after the tariff. So in 2017, we had a good year, and that's the baseline in that first dot. In 2018, we were having a good year until the middle of the year, and then it fell off a cliff. So the full 2018 year data, we're down 16%, but if you broke that out, you know, pre-July 2018 and post, you'd see basically a continued increase and then a sharp decline after the tariff.
I just want to recognize Senator Von Imhoff. She came in so quietly. I missed her, but I'm pleased to have you here. Thank you, Senator. And we have another question from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt, looking at that blue line, is this an apples to apples or rather non-apples comparison? Are these all seafood protein imports or are some of these seafood vegetables?
I think the answer is that it's apples to apples. Certainly the data in the blue line and in these three lines are apples to apples data. I can't tell you exactly which products are excluded when they're broken down in certain ways. This is actually ASME's data. We rely on ASME for a lot of these things, but it's definitely apples to apples.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you, Senator Keel and Senator Machicki.
Just to follow up, Matt, I'm not sure, and if you don't have the answer, that's fine. I can follow up with ASME, but again, I asked about our competition on the blue line from all countries that increased fairly dramatically until looks like 2019 in value. Do you know who that competition is from? I mean, we've declined since the baseline day, and the all countries has increased fairly rapidly.
Yeah, that's right. It's been basically everywhere else in the world, Senator. China's just been an enormous growth market for global seafood. And for pollock, the big winner has been Russia. Basically, Alaska pollock has been displaced by Russian pollock. So for the Alaska component of that increase, Russia is the big winner into China. For the rest, it is basically the seafood producing world, because only the United States has been hit with this tariff. So we've been shut out while global seafood production has just flooded into China.
Thank you,
Senator Machicki. At one time, I know the Russian pollock was being sold and advertised as Alaska pollock. Is that? I think that's changed now. I hope it has.
Yes. Thanks for mentioning that, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Senator Mikulski managed to get legislation passed that prohibited the practice of Russian pollock being marketed as Alaska pollock here in the United States. Unfortunately, we don't have similar protections globally. So Russian pollock continues to market itself as Alaska pollock in Europe, for example. And we'd certainly like to see that change globally. But here in the United States, thanks to Senator Murkowski, we did get that changed.
Well, thank you very much, Matt. Appreciate that. Please continue.
Thanks so much. So this is just another graph which perhaps is more helpful in breaking down the data. Betty, if you can go to slide 11. This breaks it down year by year for Alaska seafood. That previous graph was U.S. seafood and Alaska pollock, but Alaska seafood here, you can see the very steady downward trend from 2017. If it wasn't for the tariffs, we would see the 2018, 2019, 2020 graphs just far above, basically off this chart, but instead it's been a significant reduction. So one other piece of the China puzzle I just want to share with the committee before I move on to the other geographies we're going to focus on is the Chapter 6 commitments of the Phase 1 trade agreement. That agreement concluded by the Trump administration with China was an effort to put a pause, I guess, on the escalating trade war. And Chapter 6 committed significant product purchases from the United States, including significant food purchases. And we were very pleased that seafood was included as one of six categories of agricultural food purchase commitments. And for the most part, China has increased its purchases of US food. They haven't hit all their numbers, but they have, for example, wheat or soybeans, you've seen a very significant uptick through the second half of 2020. For seafood, we've seen nothing like that. China's not out of compliance with the Phase 1 commitments on seafood purchases, and there's no sign of that turning around. Whereas one component of this seems to be that whereas for soybeans or wheat, for example, a large state-owned enterprise in China can make huge purchases with a decision at the political level, there is no state-owned enterprise like that that engages in seafood purchasing. Seafood purchasing in China is done overwhelmingly in the private sector, with overwhelmingly small buyers as the participants. So as far as we can tell, as long as these retaliatory tariffs are going to be in place, the Chapter 6 Phase 1 commitments on seafood purchases are going to go unmet. So that's certainly something we're raising with the administration now. So in addition to China having done a lot to lock Alaskan seafood out of its market, Russia has engaged in extremely restrictive practices against our product. And the most significant part of that is in relation to Crimea and the sanctions that the United States imposed on Russia after the annexation of part of eastern Crimea, and then Russia's retaliation. So in 2014, as many of you know, they closed their market to almost all US seafood, and the key market for our seafood basically evaporated. That is still in place, and there is no clear prospects for a change in that. Betty, next slide. One thing that's particularly galling about that from our perspective is that Russian seafood continues to enter the United States tariff-free, even while Russia prohibits Alaska seafood in its market. So in this graph, you'll see the blue line where we were selling an increasing amount of Alaska seafood into Russia until 2014, where that ban came into place, and then we went to essentially zero. But this red line is the amount of Russian seafood that's coming into the United States. And that trend line looks very different. And with duty-free access to our enormous market, the second largest seafood market in the world, Russian seafood has actually increased its presence in the United States by over 60% since those since Russia closed its market. So when we talk about a level playing field for seafood, perhaps this is the most acute example of where Russia closes its market but massively expands its sales of seafood into the United States.
Thank you, Matt. We have a question from Senator Begich.
Matt, this is Senator Begich. Am I to understand this slide to effectively say in the last administration, a country prohibited our seafood product from being sold in that country while we provided no tariffs and, in fact, doubled the amount of money that they made in terms of selling product to us? In the last administration, Russia effectively said no to any seafood we would export by our processes and then doubled the amount they sold us with no tariff. Is that what I'm hearing?
Senator Begich, you largely have that right. Just to be clear on the dates, the annexation the tariff went into effect in 2014. The market closure went into effect in 2014. So that was in President Obama's second term. There was a continuation of the market closure under President Trump and no meaningful change in policy. And then it continues today under President Biden. So, yes, there's that is the situation. And then in terms of the quantity, that more than 60% increase number is since 2013. I think the number is 63% since 2013. So we haven't quite seen a doubling, but we're getting towards that.
Thank you. We have a question from Senator Hughes and then Senator Ochi.
Thank you, Matt. Has there been an effort to correct this? And if there is, what's the status of that effort?
Yeah, thanks so much for that question, Senator. And this is where, we're so grateful for the chance to spend some time with you and get your expertise, because we certainly have made efforts to correct that. This certainly the Alaska delegation are aware of the problem. ASME produced an excellent white paper on this last year. We have flagged this issue consistently with the White House under successive administrations, but to date we don't see any movement. I guess we feel like we are big players in a large geopolitical tension, and we don't know how to move the needle on that. So, Senator, we are not optimistic, and we are definitely on the market for any ideas that you or others might have.
Thank you. Senator Hughes, please.
Just a quick follow-up. That might be consideration for a resolution that we urge that to be addressed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Very good point. Senator Matricki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll playfully point out that's two D's and an R, but that doesn't really matter right now. the problem is the policy continues while Russia is coining their seafood as the new Alaska, if I'm correct in that statement. That's actually how they're doing their marketing. We actually need to take this very seriously. And, Matt, any suggestions you have? I believe we did a resolution back some time, but I think we need to get very active as a legislature, leaning on our delegation. This has to be corrected. It took us years to build some of these markets, 25, 30 years, and we lost them in a very short time, and it's going to be very difficult to recover from this unfair competition. So I joined Senator Begich in the fact that Alaska continues to be disproportionately affected in the few markets that we have with some of these policies from D.C., and I think it's time to correct it. So, Matt, I'm looking forward to hearing from you and the industry on what you think we can do to put the most pressure on D.C. to get us back in the game.
Thank you, Senator Begich, and we will pursue that issue with both Stephanie and Matt and come up with a resolution. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at the graph from 2012 to 2018, you have all species in there or product. Can you provide at a later time the percentage of product by pollock, by crab, by salmon, and any other species, so we get a feeling or an understanding of what products are being sold from Russia in the United States. I know the Russian crab has been one of the more popular ones, but if you could provide that to the committee, I would greatly appreciate looking at those numbers.
Certainly, Senator, we'd be happy to get you that breakdown. And I would just note that, you know, the products that are coming in from Russia, like pollock and like crab, they disproportionately go head-to-head with Alaska seafood in the U.S. market. So it's a national issue, but it's especially an Alaska issue.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Very good point, and we'll work with Matt as well as ASME on trying to get those figures for you. Now, please go ahead, Matt.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chairman. We can go to the next slide now. Thank you, Betty. And just to jump to the punchline, the China and Russia examples are egregious, and the remaining examples I have are far less alarming. But nonetheless, they do have a real impact on the Alaska seafood economy. And for Japan, you know, we have access to that market. That is absolutely a key market. But we do still face tariffs, and those tariffs are not prohibitive like the China tariffs we discussed, but they are meaningful at up to 10.5%. And what is particularly challenging about those tariffs today is that increasingly our third country competitors are getting duty-free access to the Japanese market. So Japan has concluded free trade agreements with other countries that are selling them seafood duty-free, while the United States has not made progress on market access. And that was particularly disappointing for us in 2019 because the Trump administration moved forward with a negotiation with Japan, which was really focused on agriculture. They concluded a phase one deal with Japan in August of 2019, I think it was, August or September. And really, US agriculture was thrilled with that deal because it gave a lot of market access to, you know, wheat and corn and beef and all sorts of food commodities. And they just left seafood out. There was nothing at all in the agreement on seafood, and we were just devastated by that result because we had done everything we thought we could do in terms of sharing the details about what the market access challenges were and what our asks were, and we came out empty-handed. So I will talk a little bit more about some of the reasons we think that we were left out of the Japan deal at the end. But I would just flag there that that we still face exactly the same tariffs as we did 4 or 8 years ago into Japan. Next slide, please, Betty. So the final market I want to kind of do the deep dive on is Europe. And as you all know, Europe's an absolutely critical market for Alaska seafood. But I think there's two things I would say about the market access challenges in Europe. The first one is that we still face meaningful tariffs into Europe, up to 17% on our products. And the way that we get access, tariff-free access, is under something called an autonomous tariff quota system, an ATQ system. That system is archaic and Byzantine, and it is a it is itself a trade distorting feature of the system. So basically, we need to wait until Europe sets a total amount of seafood product by product that they will let in to Europe tariff-free. And then once you hit that ATQ, they will impose the tariff. And, you know, for some products, that means that there's a race to get the seafood in January, February, March before the quota is met and the tariff is hit. And for other products, it just means that there is a, there is a tension about what the new ATQ rate will be each time it's set. So that's the first challenge that we'd like to see addressed in Europe. The second one is just that in the context of transatlantic trade tensions, we've been a constant pawn in the fight. And the big one that's happened over the last few years is the Boeing-Airbus dispute, which you all will be familiar with. In that case, Alaska Seafood, US Seafood, was hit with retaliatory tariffs by the European Union late last year. Alaska Pollock, we managed to get them exempt, but salmon, for example, was hit. They now have a four-month pause on that, but the four-month clock is ticking, and those 25% retaliatory tariffs are going back into effect soon, unless the Biden administration reaches a deal. So, nothing to do with seafood, but because of the Boeing-Airbus dispute, we're kind of caught in the middle. So certainly, not the kind of crisis that we face in China and Russia, but still really concerning.
Well, thank you, Matt. And I particularly appreciated the charts on Japan, Russia, and China showing the seafood imports, the change in values. If you could provide that for Europe, that'd be helpful to us, I think.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to get that for you.
Thank you. Senator Manchiki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt didn't get an opportunity to answer, and I don't really need an answer right now, but I'm very concerned that we've been so invisible in the consideration of the effects of tariffs. I'm really concerned about that, and even if we don't hear from you today, I'd really like to learn what we can do to make a difference. I mean, it is our number two industry, certainly on value, number one on employment numbers, and we're losing ground rapidly. So I don't need it today, but I'd certainly, through the chair, like to hear perhaps from you on where we're failing in D.C. and how we can make a difference.
Thank you. Very good point, Senator, and we will pursue that.
Yeah, thanks, Senator, and I would like to return to that. Perhaps I could just talk a little bit about, just to wrap my presentation, I wanted to talk a little bit about the dynamics we saw with the Trump White House and the Biden White House, things that we are seeing as different and similar. And perhaps, Senator, if you're willing to indulge me on that, we could perhaps have a little bit of a discussion about ways we could engage collectively after that, because I think that that kind of sets the scene.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Please continue, Matt.
Thank you. So next slide, please, Betty. The Trump administration, as I mentioned, perhaps the biggest feature of the trade policy was one of fair and reciprocal trade, was what the Trump administration talked about, and certainly an effort to help U.S. producers. And we saw that play out in high-profile contexts such as the steel and aluminum industries with 301 tariffs, so tariffs that basically limited imports. The thing that we found with seafood, and this goes once again to the theme that you're hearing today, is that we got caught in the crossfire for those industries that the Trump administration really went to bat for. In the case of China, for example, that we suffered the impacts of the retaliatory tariffs, but we didn't get the kinds of protections in the U.S. market that, steel or aluminum or many other industries got. So the classic example of that is Pollock imports from China. Most imports from China were hit with Trump administration tariffs. Russian pollock that is processed in China never made the list. It actually was on the 4B list, which was due to go into effect in December of 2019, but was suspended as they finalized the phase one agreement. So we never got any kind of tariffs on seafood coming into the United States that would give us a market advantage here at home. But we did get hit by the tariffs that other countries used to retaliate against the Trump administration for things that they were doing for other sectors. So it really was an ultimate lose-lose. In May of 2020, the Trump administration President Trump signed an executive order on expanding American seafood competitiveness. And that executive order establishes the policy of the US government that seafood trade should be fair and reciprocal. And it established a seafood trade task force that was to develop a seafood trade strategy. So we were excited by all that. And we and many other associations from Alaska and around the country engaged in that process. The first thing that happened is we saw no change to the kind of unfair and unreciprocal trade in seafood that had existed before that executive order. So, you know, the concept of fair and reciprocal was, as it played out for other industries, was that, you know, if they're putting a 20% tariff on you, we're putting a 20% tariff on their imports into the United States. It's fair and reciprocal. And, you know, for seafood, that just didn't happen. We continued to face significant imports in places like tariffs in places like China or Russia. And, you know, that seafood continued to come in duty-free, 0% in almost every instance. The second thing that happened was that seafood trade strategy, although it was developed and moved up the chain, was never released. And it was never finalized before January 20th, and we haven't seen it. So it is interesting to me and perhaps to your committee, Mr. Chairman, that a seafood trade strategy was developed over the course of most of a year. It took input from the Alaska industry, but it's never seen the light of day. So next slide, please, Betty.
We have a question here from Senator Keel.
Thank you. Matt, is that the same executive order that directed NOAA to permit finfish farms in all U.S. territorial waters?
Senator, there were four elements to the executive order, and I would describe them as four distinct elements. Aquaculture was one of the four, and seafood trade was one of the four. So we engaged heavily on seafood trade, but our association didn't engage at all in the aquaculture components of the executive order.
Senator Keel.
As a follow-up, is this one of the executive orders that remains in effect, or was this paused in the new administration?
Yes. So my understanding, Senator, is that it is under review by the new administration, but as of today, it remains in effect.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Please go ahead, Matt.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chairman. So this next slide, actually I ran a little bit behind, I think. This slide just is the news release of that executive order I talked about from May 2020. So Betty, if you wouldn't mind going to the next slide, and President Biden, of course, I would just make a couple of observations. Obviously, it's very new in the tenure of President Biden. If you go to the next slide, Betty, you'll see his nominee for USTR, United States Trade Representative Catherine Tai, who was confirmed by the Senate on a vote of 98-0, including our two Alaska senators. So, you know, she has, I guess, something of a mandate here. But I think that the main thing I would say is, even though there are such differences between these two administrations on so many issues, we haven't seen any clear indication that trade policy will change significantly as it relates to seafood. And I would just hit on a couple of points. The first one is that the United States Trade Representative's office is organized in exactly the same way as it was under the previous administration. And where we feel like we have gotten into trouble on occasions is that, for example, on that Japan deal I talked about earlier, is that seafood lives in the industrials office of USTR. And a lot of the work that's done on market access for agriculture, you know, that's USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, and the Agriculture Office of the United States Trade Representatives working together with the farm industry to get market access gains. Seafood is over here in industrials, and that's something that's not working for us, and which we really pushed as a potential structural change in that seafood trade task force process, and that we think needs to is one thing that could be done to help seafood if we can find a way to get it done. And then I think a second thing is that you know, just as a national industry, even though we do our best in DC, we still don't pack the punch of the agricultural sector. And so, you know, we do find that on occasions we slip through the cracks. And that's where, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'd like to leave it and really invite once again any ideas you have or a kind of conversation about whether there are things that you think we can be doing better or that we can be working together more effectively. Thanks so much, Mr. Chairman. Back to you.
Thank you, Matt. I just want to recognize we have Senator Wilson with us. We had him. He has to leave now, but I appreciate his visiting. And we have a question, I believe, from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me more a suggestion than a question, but it seems to me one of the things we should do, given the last comments made by Matt just now, would be look at perhaps do something in this committee around making sure we move seafood away from industrials in the trade office and into the ag section. That seems to be a pretty straightforward thing that we could do, and I believe there might be a path to getting there. So that's just putting that on the table to you, Mr. Chairman, that might be an action. I mean, surely a resolution, but beyond a resolution, I think that's something we could become more aggressive on, and I'm not sure what that action could take, but certainly I think that's one thing we might do as a committee.
Yes, thank you very much, Senator Begich, and we will work closely on this, work with the Resource Committee as well, and pursue those issues. Further questions or comments? Senator Hoffman.
Senator Stevens, if I may, this is Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie. We have a question from Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, either to Stephanie or Matt. What recommendations are we getting from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Council to address this issue?
Mr. Chairman, I'll let Matt take it, but
yeah.
You jump in here, Matt. But, as we mentioned, ASME is a real partner with us, and we did include two letters in your packet. One that we did send to Trump for the seafood, talked about this, we never saw. Might have some, will have our suggestions on what should have been considered. And then, of course, Senator Hoffman, ASME is right alongside us, and we work very closely with them, and they've been partnering with us in taking these kinds of actions.
Thank you, Stephanie. We have those letters. Any additional comments you have, Matt, on that issue?
No, just to echo Stephanie's comments about ASME as a really valuable partner with us. I mean, I think that as an Alaska industry, we are doing our best to be heard, and, you know, there's good coordination and there's good, you know, there's good, good help from the Alaska delegation in DC, from the Senate and House. But you know, it remains an uphill climb.
Thank you. Any further questions around the table or comments anyone care to make? Well, we look forward to getting some answers on the various questions that came up, Stephanie and Matt, and I think you'll see some resolutions come about because of this. You know, one thing that's always impressed me about the pollock industry is the enormously high quality of the protein that's being produced, and we can feed much of the world with that high quality protein, so that's important as well. If there's no further comments or questions before us, again, Stephanie and Matt, I really appreciate this presentation. Look forward to working in the future with both the Resource Committee and this committee, World Trade, in trying to move forward with that industry. You're very important to us, and we need to change the trade programs, the trade structures that exist now. So if there's nothing further coming before us, again, thank you, Chairman Rivak, for sharing this time with us, and we'll look forward to getting that information from you. If there's nothing further, we are adjourned at 4:38. Thank you.